coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
All right, here we go.
Because cats don't sleep naked.
That's right. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Hey Kids Comics. I am your host, Andrew Farmer. With me, as always, is my co-host, the Jedi Cole Houston. And joining us, the very special guest tonight. I'm rushing now because I just found out that cats don't sleep naked, which means I now have to go do laundry for my cats because I didn't. The clothes?
Yes.
God, Roddenberry's vision has come true.
Exactly.
It's all about the cats. So we have found us in the middle of yet another story arc. This is Roguish Eyes. We are four deep as of this issue. This will be our fourth issue. Issue 193.
I'm gonna miss this particular arc, by the way.
This arc has
been something other than else.
It's been a really interesting, good arc, and we're having all of our favorite guests on to talk about this stuff. It's like I said, it's like our celebration leading up to 200, where we get to do whatever we want. So we're gonna.
That's right.
But speaking of,
we might just make 200 a loss episode, like we did with 81.
That's right.
Just 4 months later. Oh, by the way, here's 81.
That's right. Curious. It's that stuff that happens off camera in Blair Witch. It's just
exactly.
That stuff on audio. Just weird sounds. I was speaking to very special guests. We've had them this entire arc, and tonight is no exception. We have with us the lady, the dame, Mrs. Jedi Cole Catherine Houston, one of my favorite people in the world. So, Cole, could you please, because I've lost
married
my mind.
Married into Star Wars, married into comics.
That's right, that's right.
Survived it all.
Like De Niro said.
Yeah, I knew the job was dangerous when I took it.
Can you please, I can't do it. For some reason, my brain isn't working right now. Can you please introduce our loving audience to what we're doing tonight?
Okay, well, we are continuing, barreling up. This is the penultimate chapter of Roguish Eyes. And we're exploring in a rather in-depth, unusual, and unexpected way the rogues gallery of Batman. We're not doing this in-depth to the point where we're going to talk about, you know, absolutely every single Bat villain ever. We're not going to... Sorry, Firefly fans.
Aww.
Especially Firefly / Serenity fans who thought we were finally getting around to giving Joss Whedon's abruptive masterwork its due here on this show. That wasn't the Firefly we were talking about.
Hey, Cole, can we do a show and call finally Hey Kids Comics does a show on Firefly? Do all the art as like Joss Whedon's Firefly art with like Malcolm Reynolds and all that, and then do the entire hour on the villain, the Firefly.
Oh, yeah, we should do some major teasers. Weeks leading up to it.
A year, then, just keep going until.
Finally, you know, he's obviously.
I have a little contest to see who holds out the longest before they realize it's like. They're never going to get around to it.
That's right. And when we finally do, it's like people are like, son of a bitch.
That's very good. We'll be like, oh, by the way, how do Reavers do their laundry? They run it through the wash.
Oh, my God. And that's our show. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us for Hey Kids Comics.
Uh-oh. I think, though, we've just ruined it because we gave away our plot.
Now we got to talk about something else.
But, yeah, so Roguish Eyes.
Yes, indeed. And we have talked about the Riddler, who was literally the catalyst of this.
Right.
Started out as, hey, you know, we need to really do a show about the Riddler with Joss. With Josh, rather, not Joss Whedon, but
I mean, we should do a show about the Riddler with Joss Whedon if we can lock that down. We should do one of those.
But you know, that started it all, and it became an arc. And so next thing we know, you know, we're talking about the Riddler.
Old animals, or no? Oh no, that not that kind of arc.
Well, last week it was kind of because it was Two-Face.
Oh, da 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 doubles. Doubles.
Lacey wanted to know what if we answered the question, what does he do with the other half of his suits?
Oh, wow.
We dropped the ball on that. We did drop the ball.
He donates to the half charities.
Half charities.
Well, there are certain charities, like there's Left Us.
Left Us.
Have just the left side of their body.
Oh,
and
God.
They only need a left-sided suit. Come on, it's DC. Anything's possible.
I mean, that's true.
That's weird. You accept that there's a guy from Krypton, but you don't accept there's like a half a left-sided guy.
Left Us Memorial Charity, sponsored by BillFingerBang.com. You can give on BillFingerBang.com.
That's right. And donate any left half suits you have.
Left half suits.
Am I here on the wrong day?
None of us are here on the right day.
On stage left, by the way.
Okay. We're like a Twilight Zone episode.
Half of a left only guy is like quarter of a guy.
Well, you know, two wrongs don't make a left.
Two wrongs don't make a. And that, by the way, that's the pullout quote under the logo for Left Us. Two wrongs don't make a left.
Wow. So, Catherine, unfortunately, we're happy to have you as a guest. Unfortunately, for on the next, the last episode.
But really last
and so before left is a term we use to describe Catherine's departure in the past tense from this episode, perhaps we should move on to the crux of what we're all here about. What we use to lure Catherine on board.
Right. So we've taken a really serious bent on the Riddler. Yeah, well, we fluctuated pretty. Yeah. The bell curve is pretty heavy, but the Riddler, we really got in depth, really talked about, you know, the mythology of the character and how he represents a threshold for Batman. We kind of did the same thing with the Penguin. That was an episode that got derailed by Eddie and I, wholeheartedly derailed by, purposefully derailed by Eddie and I.
I can't imagine.
Well, I said, Catherine, you'll appreciate this. I said that when Cole has to be on an episode of any podcast with Eddie and I am always fearing that he's going to reach behind the seat and tell us if we don't cut it out, he's going to turn this car around and we're going home.
That's right. I will pinch a plug out of your leg.
And then, but turnabout is fair play because last week we had Steve on, which makes me in that driver's seat going, guys.
Oh, you had to be the grown up.
Yeah,
okay.
So now you have to be the grown up, Catherine.
You wore daddy pants last week.
So now, now Catherine has to be the grown up.
No one was wearing pants.
That's right. That's because Eddie decided to go pantsless, which is not fake.
He's no pantsless podcaster.
So we've had a real good run. We've kind of broken down these characters. Cole brilliantly came up with five Batman members of Batman's rogues galleries that best represent Batman and what the connective tissue is that you have to put together to create a Batman. You know, all these disparate pieces.
Like the facets of his personality.
Correct.
Absolutely. This is sort of bat-statomy.
I'm a bathatomist. I'm a bathatomist. I went to DeVry. Don't judge me.
It's like the visible bat, if you will.
Yeah,
like
so...
Part of it's Two-Face, part of it's Joker, part of it's Penguin. And this is the part where we're getting into this is kind of the heart, in many ways, of Batman.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Or that inexplicable extra weight of the soul from Breaking Bad. So, however you want to look at it.
Well, here's the thing. Tonight we're going to talk about Catwoman. Catwoman was a
Catherine's like, yay, we're finally the subject.
Hey, by the way, that intro only took 8 minutes. That is short in comparison to what's happened in the last two. So, So, but yeah, no, the Catwoman character, and its representation and its reflection on Batman. When we talked about the Riddler, we talked about the way that the Riddler represented kind of the intellectual aspects. And in a lot of ways, the Riddler is dehumanizing to Batman, uh-huh. because the idea is that in this respect, Batman wanted to be smarter than. Right, he was challenged intellectually. When we look at the Penguin and Two-Face, it's a humanizing. It's a bringing it down from the you know godhead level to the human level.
Right.
Where Catwoman, I think, does that as well or better than any character in that lexicon. And that's where I want to start this. Is we've talked
like,
about the reflection.
How her relationship kind of brings out that part of him.
Yeah, how she was introduced to reflect, or at least has evolved over time to reflect a certain aspect of Batman. And I want to first let's start by talking about those aspects. That's where I'd like to start.
The aspects of him? Okay. Well, obviously, she's a romantic interest. That's the obvious thing. But I think there's two really cool things about her that sets her apart from all of his other rogues gallery.
Okay.
Okay. The first one is she's sane.
Wow.
That's important. That is important. Okay,
especially in the context. Yes, in the context of Roguish Eyes, especially, because I mean, the only other character in this group of five that we're talking about that has even a foothold.
Name one other character in his Roguish Eyes.
Well, Penguin has a bit of a foothold in sanity.
Beachhead. He has a beachhead on the shores of sanity.
He actually has a, you know, he's
I'll give him a toehold, but
he still has one foot in sanity, where the rest of them, are completely just bug nuts, you know.
Yeah. They're gone. Hence the term batshit crazy.
But here's the thing. Okay, so this is going to get touchy in the way that the first issues of Hey Kids Comics we ever did got touchy. Whenever two guys, thank God for Catherine's here. Thank God Catherine's here, because whenever two guys start talking about women, you run a real risk, an honest risk that things are going to go sideways. Are we to believe that the sanity that we see in her, in the way that she's depicted, in the way that kind of she has been depicted, the mirror at which we're looking at her sanity, are we comparing that to women, or are we comparing that to Batman? Is she sane in comparison if we're using Batman as the zero?
I think she's sane as compared to the average human being. Now, depending on how her story is told, has gotten to the point, she got to a point in her life where she had to channel her inner bitch. But that's one out of three women if you're lucky.
Well, I mean,
the second your head hits that glass ceiling.
Oh yeah, I think it's important to point out here. By the way, it is vitally important to point out that, you know, if you compare the spoils of her criminal career with those of the other four, she easily takes in 30 to 40% less swag per caper than her male counterparts in the criminal fraternity. And I think that is an important...
Head, though, too.
Well, you know, that's just a very misogynistic way of looking
at it. Well, I mean, but when we're talking about her level of sanity, she is an obsessive compulsive kleptomaniac cat burglar.
Yeah.
We have to consider that. So my thing is it where what's the bar? Is she sane in comparison? Like, is she at the same sanity level as Batman?
She's probably saner, because I think in her case, unlike Batman and the other four rogues that we're talking about here, as players on the other side, she has, to quote Gomez Adams, it's a common psychosis. Isn't that grand? She has a textbook psychosis that is minor by comparison.
Oh, yeah. I agree with Cole completely, because the whole dressing up in the super sexy thing and stealing stuff is a thrill. It's a kick. It's a thrill.
Okay.
And she just enjoys the daylights out of it. But here's this other guy who does the dress up thing and he's kind of her counterpart, but he has some issues.
He has mommy daddy issues. He has mommy daddy issues because mommy and daddy got killed in front of him.
And she,
wait, what? No spoilers.
She likes to yank his chain because it's like I can't believe this is awesome. I can't believe what I can put you through. I can't believe what you'll go through at this point, you know my name, you know where I live. You know, you can come up in the middle of the afternoon, say you're delivering a pizza and slap the cuffs on me, but you don't.
So do you think
that? No, but Catherine brings up a very...
Yeah, no, I know. I know she does.
I haven't really thought about that, but I mean, like, it's like, how are we going to find Catwoman? I don't know. Let's go to this apartment where the little buzzer says, S. Kyle.
Yes.
Right.
You know, maybe that would be a good start. I mean, Chief O'Hara would do a better job of bringing her to justice than Batman has.
Well, it's like you put up the bat signal, Batman shows up, and Gordon's there like, we've got to find Catwoman. I know you have a special relationship with Catwoman. Do you know where we can find her? And Batman's like, no. I mean, it's not like I follow her 3 out of 7 nights a week back home and watch her through her window. I don't know where you would. I mean, after I get fourth meal, that's where I go to eat it. Is in the tree.
Behind that inexplicable chimney on the top police headquarters, there's Catwoman filing her little, you know, razor-sharp nail things on her gloves.
Right.
Like, where are we going to find Catwoman? I don't know. She's right over there. You know, like somebody's pointing. You know, Bullock's like, over there! She's right there!
Well, and it's that...
She probably has an account there at the fetish shop.
Right!
Where else are you going to get outfits like that?
All Bruce Wayne has to do is just go pose as Ed at the fetish shop.
I like... Hold on. I don't know if you can hear it or not. I'm doing the biggest air quotes in the world to pose as Ed at the fetish shop. You mean don his Ed costume and work at the fetish shop like he does 3 out of 7 nights a week.
That's right. You know why? Because he could afford to.
That's right. Follow your dreams.
You know, he works at the fetish shop.
Do what you love. You never work a day in your life.
God's honest truth.
Oh.
No.
But of course, everyone loves her because she's the romantic interest, and they love that sexual tension, and that's good literature always has sexual tension in it.
That's the comics.
The other thing, remember I said there were two things. The other thing that's unique about her is now she was created like in the early 40s, very early
Correct.
40s, but it was before it was before the war.
Right.
And when you know,
depends on where you were.
I guess that's true.
Okay. I'm going to assume that our listeners know which war I'm talking about.
This is the point where you say if you're going to split hairs, I'm going to piss off.
and she was created before Rosie the Riveter.
Right. Yeah, most likely, yes, absolutely. I would say that's probably in a very astute.
Yeah, there will really be no catalyst for Rosie the Riveter. Yet.
When she comes on the scene, she's represented as a girl that doesn't know her place, and that is what's designed to make the reader see her as a villain.
Is
because it's like you know, thieves. The 30s, there were a whole lot of people that had a whole lot of nothing, and so criminals were kind of admired during the Depression. So what can you make a thief be? How you can make a thief not admirable is like, well, she doesn't, you know, it's a girl that doesn't know her place. And so that's a good reason. It's a good reason not to like her.
But I would.
But also, I'll go ahead.
I know. I think I can take what you were saying, Catherine, and put a little bit more of a spin on it. because when the way I see it, and I see it with Wonder Woman, and this is sort of harkens back to conversations we've had, and this is again why I'm glad you're here, is that women were written at this time period, and I think you're absolutely right. I think the friction, the drama comes from the idea that she doesn't know her place. That makes her an adversary, right, against Batman.
Now, Wonder Woman, but wasn't Wonder Woman created in, like, the 60s or 70s, or am I wrong?
No, she was created.
No, Wonder Woman's in the 30s.
Yeah, much earlier.
I apologize.
No, you're okay. Right. She was created as a weird S&M character, and that's no joke. Okay. Like, it was straight up, like, tie me up, boys. Weird. Okay. But I think that even beyond just not knowing her place is the fact that she's written as if she thinks she does.
Yeah.
And that makes her that even goes further to make her a quote-unquote bad guy, is that she thinks she knows her place. It's a woman who thinks she knows her place in comics, and Batman has to put her in her place because she obviously doesn't know. So yeah, I think you're absolutely right, is that she...
But another aspect of Catwoman that's kind of unique, especially for her day, is that she is a female foil, a female adversary, in a very decidedly male-oriented fraternity,
right,
in that the criminal in comics is almost always a guy.
Right.
You know, nowadays there's a lot of female supervillains, but apart from Wonder Woman, you didn't tend to see any bad women. You didn't see any adversaries that were female. I think Cheetah was probably around from the early days of Wonder Woman, but you know, that's just like some, you know, an evil counterpart, an opposite number to Wonder Woman. But what Catwoman represented was a unique take on the Batman psyche, in that she kind of emulates Batman. She starts out as a cat burglar who then, you know, takes the cat's part literally, because it's almost like Batman coming on the scene gives her permission to have this persona. And so in a way, she's very empowering and, you know, self-empowering, and the fact that she becomes a Batman villain when the rest of the Rogues Gallery is just a damn locker room.
Yes, exactly. And she knows, and she just loves the attention too. And this is one of the things that actually, one of the things that makes her most cat-like. I know she's supposed to be a cat burglar, but cats, if you have them in your life, well, if they want attention, it's like, pay attention to me. And if you don't want to pay attention, it's like, hey, how about if I knock this off the shelf? Will you pay attention to me now? Huh?
Right.
And that's what she does, is she does this stuff. She does this stuff for the attention. It's as satisfying as actually stealing the merchandise itself.
Well, of course. But the flip side of that is when your cat doesn't want your attention anymore.
That's right.
You get a swat to the face and then off into the night. Like, wherever I want to be, I'm going there, and you don't follow me or I will hide.
And then,
exactly.
And then in a very comic book-like fashion, the next time you see them, like, never happened.
No, never happened. Never happened.
Yeah. Well, that'd be like 2 seconds later. It's like, what?
Oh, yeah.
So one of the other aspects of Catwoman that I wanted to touch on was, it ties back into what we were just talking about and what Catherine brought up, was what we don't see very often, at least at this period. Now we see it more, and now we see it in a vast cornucopia of ways, is the representation of a comic book courting ritual that would be metaphorical to our mundane courting rituals. So, you know, if I want to date with a girl, I call that girl. You know, you go on a date, and then you wait the 3 days. So do I call her? Do I not call her? Now it's like, do I send her a text? When do I send her a text? You know, okay, I'm going to call her. I called her. She didn't answer. I left her a voicemail. A day later, she calls back. You know, and for them, though, they take that and they explode it into comic book fashion, where instead of like, okay, you know, I met this girl, I got her number, I have to wait 3 days. It's, I saw a Catwoman on the roof stealing the golden sphinx from the Gotham Museum of Natural History. Do I chase her? How long do I chase her? How many roofs do I chase her across before I let her go? Because I'm going to let her go. I let her go all the time.
Well,
I
will point out, though, you bring up an interesting point. I never made this connection because I didn't do a whole hell of a lot of dating. Was that now that I think back
right
on it.
First time.
That's right. That's right. Got it right the first time.
Now that I think back on it, actually, Batman tended to arrest Catwoman 3 days after. He
right.
would, like, wait 3 days and then come and arrest her with the Batcuffs.
Right. But what is that? I mean, is that – am I wrong in that assumption? Like, did it – what we saw the – and I think we all will agree that it's sort of the Sam and Diane, you know, moonlighting will they, won't they of comic books for a really long time, right? Like
– Well, it was originally, I think the original
sexual tension. It's that's what people like about that relationship the most, I think.
Right.
Oh yeah. In fact, there was the original title of Catwoman's first appearance was Sleepless in Gotham.
I like it now that I can just start under my breath cursing you before it even starts. Now
you know where I'm going.
If you amplify this podcast, you can hear me about 7 times an episode. Just be like, damn it, here it comes. All right, here we go. Just brace yourself, strap in. Matt Damon in The Martian. I'm gonna be eating poop potatoes for the next 5 minutes. So no, yeah, I just, that was always cool for me, was that there was that. And I think a lot of it, if it was New Jersey, if it was Newark, New Jersey, and Batman was in Newark, New Jersey, I think Catwoman would have been behind bars every day. When you compare that to what was going on in Gotham, somebody stealing, you know, a necklace, a jade necklace in the shape of a panther, you know, you got off a little easier, number one, because, you know, nobody's going to give you a speeding ticket when there's a 5-car pileup a mile away. You know what I mean? And number two, obviously Batman had strong feelings for her. She wasn't hurting anyone besides stealing from the rich, which Batman would inevitably be like, you know, the last panel of whatever comic would be hand out, so that she would end up having to put whatever in his hand so he could return it. And then she would, you know, fly off into the night. So do you feel like that was the reason for the way that relationship was written? Like, do you feel...
I think in many ways, I don't know if it was necessarily from the outset, but in many ways, I think that Catwoman comes along and gives Batman, and I say this in the sense of the actual, you know, writers of the character, it gives Batman permission, as it were, to have that tender side, as it were.
And that's one thing that Batman misses, unless, you know, there are two instances in the Batman mythos where you actually get to see Batman have a, and I would almost consider this the same thing, is when he's with his quote-unquote family. You know, your various Robins, your Alfred, mm-hmm. your Catwoman falls into that category, I think.
Right.
So I think that when we're looking at what this does for the character, how this reflects the character, I think, yes, I think you're right. I think she definitely represents kind of the love interest. She also represents that humanity in Batman, where we don't get that humanity from anybody else in the Rogues Gallery. But
exactly.
But, you know,
I agree, and she's also at least in her early days before Comic Code, I think, downright soft core at points. Because I mean, your target audience is male readers, and so there's nothing like nothing like that to
well, in
get
fact,
10 cents for a comic book.
Well, yeah, right before the show, I think that it was literally a ploy to encourage dads to buy Batman titles for their kids, so they could sneak a few peeks at little kitten with a whip there.
And I think that's part. I think if you were writing these books, Because keep in mind, we talk about it all the time, comic books are a business, right? Even back even back then, comic books were a business. As a matter of fact, they were as big a business then as they were now, not so much as they were in the 80s and the 90s, because there were less stimulus out there for you to get your hands on. You know, you had your radio shows, you had comic books. That was it. Until the invention of TV, you saw comic books dip, and I'm sure those boardroom meetings were real fun, but... But you wanted some salaciousness in these books. You wanted Wonder Woman getting bound up by the mobsters in her, you know, with her lasso of truth. You wanted Catwoman, you know, with a whip and claws and a bodysuit and a little tennis skirt in the early, iterations.
If you're a serviceman in the 40s and you know, you're trying to trade with people for stuff to read, it's like, oh, it's a comic book and you're reading it. It's like, Merry Christmas. Where did you get
that? This is better than the Noah's Ark because I won't have to be outside of the plane to enjoy it, if you know what I'm talking about.
That's right.
Because that's what I'm talking about there.
So, okay, that's a good – Cole with his professional – Cole's a consummate professional. set that up perfectly, because the next thing that I thought maybe we should talk about is – and we've talked about this with the Riddler and we talked about this with Penguin and with Two-Face, where do you think – now, if you do the research, you can see that Bob Kane – again, Eddie would argue that for about the next 30 minutes that Bill Finger actually created Catwoman. But if you do the research, it's stated that Catwoman actually was inspired – by Jean Harlow, which makes absolute sense if you look up picture of Jean Harlow.
Okay, yeah.
And Bob Kane's niece, or was it Bob Kane's niece or cousin or something like that, were the two main inspirations.
Yeah, I hope it was somebody over 18.
It was Bob Kane's cousin, Ruth Steele is her name. Okay. Ruth Steele is her name. but so where do you think the conceit, the concept, the ideas, considering the time period of where she was created, you know, which was 1940, so let's say between 35 and 40, where do you think the idea for Catwoman came from? Because like we were saying, there was no other character like Catwoman on the scene at that time, and still very few since that really are like Catwoman, unless it's a direct Catwoman ripoff. So
you're gonna have to help me. You said and you're right. The thing about Wonder Woman I was thinking of was when they tried to revamp her.
With the
pantsuit and everything.
Oh yes, the Gloria Steinem.
Yeah. So
even Gloria Steinem said, "Okay, no."
that's where in my brain that came from, but. Do you think she was I would have to research. Were there a lot of female characters
that
were created during that period of time?
The only
was it kind of a thing?
The only ones characters? That were really created, you had like you had supporting characters. So you had Cole hit the nail on the head when he said that Catwoman was pretty much it when it came to like a female foil to a male character. So you had Wonder Woman who is pre-existing, right? But then you had supporting characters. You had Lois Lane's. You had that type of either a love interest.
So maybe Wonder Woman as the good battling male evil set the stage for the opposite.
I think you're probably right.
That's not an unsound approach to it. The other thing is that the Catwoman I think speaks to a sort of budding the rise of in cinema of the strong female lead. You have a lot of characters like Lauren Bacall who can go toe to toe with Bogart. Who goes up and talks to Bogart like that? He's dizzy broad. You don't do that, but she does. And there, I think Hollywood was discovering there's an appeal to a woman who can stand on her own and, not be a doormat, but at the same time, not just be a complete unmitigated bitch. Uh-huh. And, So in many ways, I think Catwoman is inspired by the cinema femme fatale.
She's often
referred to as the feline femme fatale. And I think she very much fits that bill. And if I'm not mistaken, there's at least, I can't think of any, but I'm sure one could cite examples in cinema of a some sort of story where the quote-unquote bad guy turns out to be a woman.
Well, I mean, if you look at them, I did a quick cursory look around, you know, movies that came out in 39 and 40, and you have movies like His Girl Friday, you know, you have, and I think that the thing that we need to look at is what we were seeing at the time is like the Howard Hawks film noir movies. So you had these sultry dames. You know, that could, like you said, hold their own against a Bogart. They can walk into his detective's office and you know, sit down across from him with her wide-brimmed hat pulled down over her face and, you know, say the cat's in the bags and the bag's in the river, Johnny. You know, like, and pull the line off. So there was a time at which this was definitely happening. We were seeing sexy, strong female leads come into their own in these movies, especially, you know, your noir, your Hitchcock era gangster films. She was a gangster dame. I mean, that's what she was.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, she's a. Oh yeah, but the thing is, she, you know, no, she wasn't a gangster dame. Not Catwoman wasn't.
Okay.
Because a gangster dame would actually be more acceptable.
You're right.
Because she answered to no man.
Right.
And that,
yeah, she wasn't just a gunball.
That was just totally.
Harley Quinn, ironically,
created
decades later, is more of the gangster dame.
Right.
Yes.
She's literally the gun mall to Joker. Yeah. Where Catwoman, yeah, she is like her own thing. But I think because. It's like there's an acceptable face, like a man can be a doctor and a woman can be a nurse in this age. A man can be a psychotic killer and a woman can be a jewel thief.
Right.
Because a jewel thief is a woman's criminal enterprise.
Right, right.
You know, it's shoplifting writ large, basically.
Yes, that's it, yeah.
And so. That's wherein the big difference is. Is that's the acceptable face of the woman criminal. You could not have a Joker or even a Riddler. I mean, God forbid, you know, even with some many years between the creation of some of these characters, but you wouldn't see these types of characters that a lot of the Rogues Gallery represent as a female then. And so what you get instead are some, is you get a character that's, if you will, acceptable, the acceptable face of a criminal, of a female criminal. And that is you give her, you know, a dirty job a woman can do.
Well, I just looked because I wanted to, you know, flesh out your postulation that, you know, if you look at these things, you'll see these representations, and I completely forgot until I saw it. If you think about Bridget O'Shaughnessy's role in The Maltese Falcon as Mary Astor, do you remember The Maltese Falcon at all?
Oh yeah,
that's exactly what we're talking about here.
Yeah,
she is the thief, you know, and you know, Bogart's lines in it are exactly Batman's lines. It's almost a one for one for their relationship. That's really cool. Good call, guys. That's the kind of unpacking I want to do.
All right, let me unpack a little something that occurred to me as far as, because we've been talking about the psychological and the philosophical relationship of these rogues with Batman.
Right.
And I'm going to challenge you with this one. What Catwoman represents in the Batman mythos?
Uh-huh.
What is the one thing that Bruce Wayne, you know, Bruce Wayne inherited his father's fortune, his father's land, and, you know,
manservant.
His manservant inherited everything. What is the one thing that Thomas Wayne had that Bruce Wayne cannot have? That Joe Chill did not only rob Bruce Wayne of his parents, what did he rob him of? And that is a normal relationship.
Yeah.
the ability.
He will never have a proper romantic relationship. He will never be able to settle down and have children the way his father did.
Uh-huh. That's right.
Even boarding schools and manservants notwithstanding, there is no room for romance and courtship. When Catwoman
represents more lust, I think.
But also Catwoman, really, I mean, she is an embodiment of lust herself. But in her relationship with Batman, it's sort of a love-lust relationship. She lusts for Batman. Batman loves her in so much as Batman can allow himself to love. But what she does represent is that one little straw of hope.
Right.
That there is somebody out there. She is dynamic enough, but for the kleptomania, but for her obsession with being a cat burglar, they would be a perfect pairing. She is his ideal mate. Plus, the thing is, there's very little changing in the monogramming because bat and cat, there's just one. There's an economy of scale there that cannot be ignored.
But what you said is really interesting, and here's why. Because what we see in the evolution of the character, as Batman evolves, right? As Batman becomes kind of darker and also the norm, you know what I mean? Kind of the high watermark, the level of what superheroes are. Because where goes Batman, there goes the DC Universe. As Batman gets darker, the DC Universe gets darker. If you lighten Batman up, the DC Universe gets lighter. But what you see in, like, the 70s and the 80s, and in the late 60s and into the 70s and the 80s, when this really – because when Catwoman first comes onto the scene, she was less of a love interest than, like, a – she would appear once or twice, maybe a year, you know, and then she'd be out because, you know, they – whatever weird storylines they'd be doing for Batman at that time where he turned multiple colors and whatever weird shit they were into. But when you started really – they started really exploring the relationship between Selina and Bruce and Batman and Catwoman, because this is less a relationship between Selina and Bruce, and we haven't even talked about that aspect. But you start to see this. You're right. This is the thing that Joe Chill robbed Batman of, right? Bruce cannot have a regular relationship. But what you start to see develop, and I think it was a sign of the times, was this kind of free to be you and me. I'm a bat. You're a cat. Bat's got to fly. We'll be together when we can, and not when we're not. As kind of an acceptable norm, as it was happening more and more in society, that the atomic family wasn't adhering as well when divorce rates started going up, and people weren't getting married as young, and you started to see that reflected, and I think it was reflected in this because you would see Batman and Catwoman get together on a rooftop at the end of issue A. And by issue B, nobody talked about it. In issue C, Robin might be like, "Hey, have you seen Selina?" And Batman's like, "Cut the crust off my sandwich." And then he gets in the Batmobile, and he gets in the Batmobile and rides off to fight, you know, Captain Cold or Mr. Freeze, and you don't talk about it until 6 months later when there's all of a sudden a jewel robbery and Batman kind of nudges Alfred, and Alfred's like, "Oh, dog's going to hunt tonight." And then Batman jumps in the Batwing and flies off and is gone for the rest of the issue.
Robin's coming in late. He's like, "Well, wait, where's Bruce?" He's like, fifth meal. Hashtag fifth meal.
But think about this. You were talking earlier about calling up, waiting 3 days to call a woman up for a date.
Right, right.
Batman had no control over Catwoman at all. There was no call in Catwoman.
That's true. I mean,
she called him. When she was ready for a little bat action, then she went down and put a brick through the jewelry store window.
Exactly.
That's as good as the bat signal right there. That's the cat signal.
We call that the batty call. It's like a booty call, but
oh, batting cage.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, the thing about it is, like, you know, the bat signal is just a light that you shine against the ever-present cloud cover of Gotham.
Right.
Apparently, they're like some residual stuff, whatever Weather Wizard uses is, like, is always there. But the cat call, the cat signal.
The cat call.
The cat signal is like one of those old cranking civil defense horns. Stabs out by the, it echoes out of the bat cave. And yeah, it's kind of like a male playing like a tomcat. Oh, God.
Yeah, or here's another theory, right? In one of the unused wings of the Batcave, there's a vault, and within that vault are billions of dollars of cat-themed jewelry and statuary that whenever he's really desperate, he just goes to the museum and opens an exhibit and waits.
Oh, great.
Like, yeah, give me that jade statue, and oh, yeah, I need it tonight. So that diamond necklace with the cat's eyes, called the cat's eyes, get me that. Let's go open an exhibit.
What the hell? Let's just use the original prop for the Pink Panther diamond while we're at it.
Yeah, let's go. Let's go open this exhibit, and now I wait.
I like the idea, because if he actually returned the merchandise, he'd have to explain why he had the merchandise, but why he didn't have her.
And I don't...
Well, because it's like the Blue Carbuncle, in a way. He just actually kept the original stuff so he could lure Catwoman back in with it.
Well, she has to give it back. That's the thing, is she steals it not knowing it's Bruce's. Batman catches her, they hit the slap and tickle, Batman holds out his hands and gets it back and goes back into the vault. It's just an endless cycle, and she knows it. Don't let her tell you she doesn't know it.
They feed off of each other. But the thing about it is that Catwoman is one of those unique ones, like, you know, if Ra's al Ghul wants to visit the Batcave, Ra's al Ghul just shows the hell up.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
She's the one who gets invited to the cave, and that's a distinction, you know. She's an invited guest, and that's a bit of a rarity.
Yeah, that indicates that they actually had Febrezed and they baked something, and
right.
You know, they were ready for company.
Yeah, and they wheeled out the bat-shaped bed.
Right.
It spins way too fast, though. They let Wayne Tech make that thing. It's like a helicopter blade under there.
Built on the platform of a tilt-a-whirl. That's really the
Batman doesn't half-ass anything. All right, that's just
hover beauty rest.
And you know, it's pretty. It's got to be sad for Bruce the Robins are asking where she is. You know, like, hey, Selina hasn't been by in a while. Like, shut up, Dick. Like. Go put on your weird gold chain and do your homework, you weirdo.
Well, I wish you would, because you're getting damn testy.
So one of the things we've talked about on each of these issues is...
Why?
Oh, I've got to go. I've got to stop and get 6 chalupas and be outside of the National History Museum in 10 minutes.
You want some Mexican pizza?
Catwoman likes a Mexican pizza. I need 3 chalupas.
Your ass better have chocolate. That's all I can say.
The best I can do is caramel empanadas. That's all they had. It's 4th meal. So we've talked about in every issue.
Can I ask something real quick?
Because
I tried to like merge in like.
Oh yeah.
And gave up on that. So
sorry.
That's all right. Hashtag my life. shortly after she was created, women's roles were like thrown into anything that you wouldn't imagine women would start having to do, they had to do within like a decade.
Right,
it's like,
for sure.
Wow. All of a sudden everything is different. And then of course the war ends and you can't put the genie back in the bottle. And it's always been interesting to me that Catwoman as a character, even though she's been revamped from time to time, has always retained her sexiness as her primary power,
right?
Oh, Batman! No matter how the times seem, you know, change over the decades. she is so secure in that her superpower is that she's just so sexy and appealing to him that that's what she uses all the time.
Right.
And I think actually, to me, it says it's like, okay, you've come a long way, but actually, women still have and use that power over men, and I think that they always have. And I know that's a very unliberated, unequal thing to say, but I think that she embodies that more than anything.
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, she's got it and she flaunts it. So.
Yeah. Well, she doesn't flaunt it; she uses it.
Oh yeah, I mean, but she knows that is. Unlike the rest of, well, in many ways, I think each of the rogues has, it's interesting you bring that up, because her sexuality, her attractiveness to and being attracted to Batman, him being attracted to her, that kind of sexual tension, the sexual dynamic, the everything about them, is that aspect, that's her barb.
Right.
In Batman. But when you brought that up, it occurred to me that fits beautifully with the rest of this arc so far and to come, in that the Riddler's barb is the challenge. The Penguin's barb is that kind of inexplicable place that he has in the criminal fraternity that challenges, you know, each Riddler challenging his mind. The Penguin challenging his patience and his fortitude in many ways. Two-Face challenging that sense of, when have I, you know, do I go too far? Is this a mirror image or a broken mirror that I'm looking at? She challenges his ability to literally be subjective, because she'll talk about the fact that, you know, she does a little token time for here and there, but for the most part, you know, she gets away with a lot of stuff just because Batman kind of turns a loving blind eye.
Because Batmite just
Batmite's not going to be shaking hands with Catmite if he's not careful.
That's right.
So, you know, I think each of, and then of course Joker challenges everything about Batman.
Right.
Challenges his sense of humanity. You know, how is this creature, that, you know, this man who has become this embodiment of everything evil?
Well, Joker, I think, is the exact opposite of Catwoman.
Oh, absolutely.
He's horrific. There's nothing about him at all that's desirable, and
there's not a shred of sanity left in him.
He's just pure, he's pure malice, where Catwoman, I think, gets genuine fun out of what she does, whereas Joker, I think, just satiates an evil.
Well, that's his morning coffee. You know, kidnapping 17 school children and making them smile and laugh forever is his morning coffee. That's what gets him through the day. You know, that is an enjoyment for him. That's just, you know, that's just, you know, his part of his daily routine. You know,
it's his jam.
It is his jam. It is definitely his jam. But I think that you're right in the sense that she, in much the same way we talked about Two-Face challenging Batman's sense of justice, right? I think that we talk about Catwoman doing the same, in the sense that Catwoman represents a threshold of, you know, can I show leniency? Is beating someone half to death too far? But is letting Catwoman go, even though, you know, when she did rob a thing but gave me the stuff back at the end of the issue or the end of the episode, you know, am I being too lenient on Catwoman? And why am I being too lenient on Catwoman? I think she also
why does she get to break all the glass she wants? I mean, no wonder Joker just gets worse all the time.
Right.
just like, oh, she gets to be, you know, Miss Glass Breaking Party over here, and I trip over and break a chunk off a park bench, and all of a sudden I'm back in Arkham. That's, I mean, granted, I broke that off so I could stab a guy, but still.
And I did stab a guy.
Okay, and I hope enough people are listening that I get at least a few haters dialing me up. There's a Shakespeare quote, and I'm going to horribly misquote it, okay? But I think it's, if I'm not mistaken, I think it might be from Henry V, maybe? But it's where they, he has some friends of him, they're going into battle, and they had discovered two traitors in their midst. But they were talking. They were talking about. Cole probably knows this, and he can probably set me straight on it. But they're talking about the night before when everyone had gotten drunk, and there were these. There was this guy who was thrown into irons because he was ranting and raving and been saying horrible things about the king. And the king says to pardon him. And one of the two guys who are the suspected traitors come up and says, oh, but you've got to punish him too, to set an example. And, the king says, well, you know, if you don't, if something like this, even though, you know, the whole, it was very much illegal and punishable by death, if things like this can't be winked at, then how am I supposed to act when acts of treason are brought before me?
Exactly.
And I think that's a really long way of saying that's Batman's what gives him pause. It's like I've got the Joker, who's a mass murderer, and he's just a death storm.
Right.
And I've got this gal who likes to dress up and steal baubles and doesn't hurt anybody, and it's like, how can I, if I'm not going to kill the Joker, if the worst I'm going to do is take the Joker to an insane asylum,
right?
Then
yeah. In fact, I found the quote.
You were the Catwoman.
Exactly. In fact, the quote is actually, if little faults proceeding on distemper shall not be winked at, how shall we stretch our eye when capital crimes chewed, swallowed, and digested appear before us?
I like Catherine's version better. I think there's an also when we're talking about this, right, and as we come into to wrap it up, because we got to start wrapping it up, I think that there's one thing we are missing. I think the big one. I think that all of the Rogues Gallery, I think that they all secretly really like the Catwoman. And I think that they all secretly really like the Catwoman because when Cole's cat call goes out in the iceberg lounge, everybody's like, oh, thank God. It's like, you know, it's like noon tea in World War II. Like, they all get in their cars, like, we're gonna go rob a bank because we got a good 2 days before Batman's back on the warpath. So let's get this going.
Yeah, this had been a week. We probably got 2 days out of this.
Yeah.
We were back in June when it had been like 3 months.
Right.
Oh. It was like a freaking crime spree around these parts.
Back.
Batman came and mopped up.
Do you remember after Batman got time bulleted and fought his way back through time, that cat call siren went off for 5 days straight? I think it was the cat call siren. It could have just been Batman. I don't know at that point, but...
I don't know from time bulleting. The villains never get time bulleted, so
they don't.
They don't have a good frame of reference there.
They don't.
I'll tell you that the villains know at this point they all have that time of the month on their calendar though.
Oh my wow! Well, we better lay low for about a week.
They lock themselves in, chain the doors.
Come the 23rd, it's gonna be loud.
And for the next week, Batman's gonna be Frank Miller Batman, because he's gonna be frustrated, pissed off. Just gonna be slapping Robin in the face for a week straight. Just come here. It's the time of month. Penguin looks really good during those 7 days. Hey, Oswald, you want to come over tonight? Netflix and chill? No, Bruce. All right. Let's wrap this up. Catherine, you've been a pleasure and a joy, and you quoted Shakespeare, and
you're better than the real thing.
You classed up the joint, so thank you. I appreciate that. Good. I think we did it justice. I think, Cole, what are we doing next week?
I think we did that justice.
Justice.
With a side of spaghetti. next week, we are concluding. And I swear I am going to seriously miss this. We are concluding Roguish Eyes with Barrel of Laughs. Finally going to talk about Firefly.
Yep. Thank God.
We're going to talk about Killer Moth.
God, I wish we could do an entire episode on Killer Moth.
Crazy Quilt.
Mm-hmm.
I can't decide which. But actually, no, we're going to be, of course, talking about the Joker, because you've got to save. The Joker is an act you can't follow, so we're going to have to end it there. Kelly Long will be joining us again. For the first time ever being called in not to talk about classical mythology.
That's right.
All right, Kelly.
So I'm sure she'll be thrilled to not be just sort of the token historian and
right
scholar. This time she'll be called in just because this is something that doesn't necessarily have a thing to do with the classics.
She's probably as
Euclid was known as something of a joker.
She's probably sick of being the one sane person on every episode of Ancient Aliens. Which is basically every show she's on with us. Like, no, that's not how it works. Like,
that's not how any of this works.
Yeah, I can't wait for the Joker. There's a lot within that to unpack, like so much. So I can't wait to talk about the Joker. That's going to be hell of a lot of fun. Yeah, it is. So Cole, why don't you plug us up and we will get out of here for the evening. Catherine, seriously, this was amazing. Thank you so much for your help tonight. You carried the show.
Oh, absolutely. I think there was, you know. I don't think you realize, Catherine, how much you were going to be bringing to this, because it's not about what we love about this type of show is it's not about just spouting off what others have written. It's the things that come out of just discussing, and I think that's what people enjoy, is to hear what kind of observations do we and our guests make, and you've made some amazing ones.
Oh, thank you.
Plus, we now have the recurring feature of...
Yeah, we do. I wonder if I can find that noise to cut into the beginning of the intro for the show now, the new intro. Just that's the way it starts.
Y'all cop fans, it's time.
Right before Eddie starts in with his seduction of the innocence thing. God, what a brilliant jackass he is.
Yes, he was. So you can, you're of course ideally finding us either on Podbean or if you found us on Podbean and not the JCU, check out JediCole.com, because this is the home of not only Hey Kids Comics, but the Rancor Pit and the Rancor Pit Live and Do-It-Yourself. Catherine will probably be finally trying to connect up with the elusive Bobby Blakey soon to do some more What'd You Think, once Catherine and I finally get a moment or two to go see a movie again.
Right.
Really?
Lots of great shows on the JCU. You've got a brand new one coming up. I don't want to spoil anything just yet. But Matt Rocks, who's been on Rancor Pit, is about to launch a brand new show that'll be carried on the JCU.
Oh, dang.
I got a lot of really cool stuff coming up here. The site's going to have a new look very shortly. And we got another little something coming up. I don't want to talk about until everything is settled. But it's really exciting. We're going to be really expanding the scope of the JCU. So check that out. Write to us. Please write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com. Ask us some questions, things you'd like us to talk about on the show. We're going to do another Hey Kids Comics Presents, and we don't really want to go 100% sourcing from Yahoo Answers. We'd like some.
Maybe you don't.
Speaking
of JCU, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but I look over this one's shoulder every once in a while, and he gets some of the most fantastic numbers on JCU from all over the world, and it never ceases to amaze me. So if you're if you're outside of the United States, please drop us a line and let us know
in fact, just this week, Hong Kong and Moldova were added to the list of a lot of page views from Brazil, Israel, Germany, France,
Ukraine, I think.
Well, how many page views? How big did we get in Brazil over the Olympics? When all of our listeners obviously are Olympic level athletes, so they all descended on the Brazil, right? So we had to shoot through the roof those numbers.
Three.
Damn it! I'm trying really hard.
This month, in the month of August, 68 page views from United Arab Emirates.
Yes!
As they used to say on Hee Haw, which I'm sure plays very well.
It plays huge. Emirates. It's huge in the UAE. Hee Haw is huge.
That's right.
Our number two most country we're most visited, the JC is most visited from, Russia.
Yeah. Yeah, Russia loves us.
Followed by Germany, France, and Ukraine. It's just amazing. Turkey, China, Poland, Malaysia. Those are like the top countries that dial up the JCU. I'm always thrilled to see that somebody somewhere in the world is, it's always nice to know somebody's listening in or checking it out. But to see that it's all over the globe, it's just amazing.
It's just heartwarming and humbling and flattering and on behalf of my husband and I, thank you.
Oh, absolutely, and me, and Cole's other husband, other hetero life mate.
And regardless of where you are in the world, check out our Twitter feed at the Jedi Cole U. If you're in the United States, and especially in the state of Texas, check out Convention Awareness Project Texas, which is my little side project where I track and direct you to every convention in the Lone Star State all year long. Again, this year, over 100 conventions statewide so far this year and in the coming months. Keep it 100, Texas.
Well, and in closing, I think I can tell you why we are so big in Russia.
Okay, I'll bite.
Thank you, Catherine. Thank you. Cole, you're a jerk. Thank you, Catherine. I appreciate that. Because unlike the Russian government, in Russia, podcast listens to you, Russia. Podcast listens to you.
Oh, look at that.
That's my... Yeah, I just made a Yakov Smirnoff joke.
I think
right now. So on behalf of the Left of Us charity... the JCU, and myself.
Don't forget, did not mention before, but do not forget the other charity, Right On, which is another half of Harvey Dent suits.
You understand that the motto of the Left of this charity is do the right thing.
Yeah, right? Right. And the motto for Right On is don't be left behind. That works. We'll workshop it. We'll workshop it out. We'll draw something up. Bye. That's right. Bye, collect and enjoy your comics. Guys, say goodnight.
Good night.
Good night, everybody. You've been great. We'll see you next week.